John Falls, welcoming you to Stirring It Up, the best tasting show on radio. From the swamps and bayous of South Louisiana, thanks for joining us in our little piece of culinary heaven where good cooking is just a way of life. Mornings begin here with a roux simmering in a cast iron pot, and our evenings end with thoughts of what we're going to cook tomorrow. All right, everybody, welcome to the kitchen table. So nice to have all of you with us this morning on this beautiful, beautiful day. We appreciate you taking the time to join us and be with us, because there's a lot of folks trying to get through a screen door this morning, and you got in.
They're in.
They're in right now. I guarantee you they're here. Pull that chair up over there. Don't make too much noise as y'all walk in the screen door today.
Tiptoe. Do they have to use their kitchen voices? Remember how your teacher used to tell you that? Use your inside voice.
I never had a teacher that ever told me about an inside voice. I went to St. James Parish where people learn things. Double toil and trouble. Fires burn and cauldron bubble in seventh grade. If you told that to a student in seventh grade today, they'd look for a rope and hang themselves in the hall.
Double toil and trouble. Did you ever wonder why you were given that passage to memorize?
Well, no, we were given a whole play to memorize it. That just happens to be, I could say, is this a dagger I see before me, the handle toward my hand? Come, let me clutch thee. Though I have thee not, I see thee still. From Macbeth, of course. Seventh grade literature, Prof. McDonald, St. James High School on the river. That's when school was school. See, I'm only harassing everybody, too, because we do have good schools, and teachers really work hard to teach students, and I know that's I hope they take me in jest. And those who don't take me in jest, go to Macbeth and study the passage on the dagger scene. Anyway, y'all, hey, it's a great day today. We're so happy to have you, Michelle. Nice to have you as executive producer and co-host, your recent elevation on the show. You doing all right?
I'm great. Thank you so much.
I called you last night. I was leaving New Orleans late. I called. I got no answer.
You texted me, and I worked so hard yesterday. Because, see, he wasn't here yesterday He was taking care of business at the plant in White Oak restaurant. And so I was knocked out by 8:30.
It's always nice to converse with you on the highway coming back from New Orleans, the land of dreams, right?
Yeah, I'm sorry you missed that.
I did miss that. Anyway, across the glass wall over there, we have our engineer, Dean Slama. How are you doing?
Howdy, howdy, y'all. I'm doing all right. I know about that hour drive on the interstate. It can be lonely late at night.
I know. That's why I value her presence in the car with me to keep me awake.
Even a little text message.
See that?
I heard what he said. I've been on that road myself.
Yeah, she called me one night because she had a flat tire. She said, I need some help on the road. I said, well, I'm in bed already. That's not true. That's not exactly the way it happened.
Close enough.
Have y'all given any thought, Slum, have you given any thought to what you're going to have for this big upcoming holiday we call Thanksgiving?
I got your cranberry recipe.
Well, yeah, but that's called a side dish.
A side dish, okay. Yeah. Well, I was eyeballing some really nice full turkey fryers the other day at the grocer, so I was thinking, maybe we could fry a turkey.
Yeah, that's oilish.
Yeah, I think that would be a deep fryer.
Or deep fryer. You definitely want the fat if you do it a turkey.
That sounds very ambitious.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, they were kind of pricey. You know, the idea, it lingers. Yeah.
I always enjoy talking to Michelle about holidays because they normally have unconventional food for holidays. Like Christmas Day, it's spaghetti and meatballs. So what's Mom treating us to this year for Thanksgiving?
I don't know. I hate to say we haven't discussed it yet, and so, here we are this close. So I don't know. I don't know if she's cooking.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know if I'm purchasing a pre-cooked bird.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know if I'm making reservations somewhere.
Yeah.
So I don't really know yet.
So y'all hadn't discussed anything?
No, and I know we need to get with it.
You're already in luck because you don't have to worry about reservations. There's none anywhere. So now is it your house or your mom's house? That's really what it's all about at this point, Dot. Your reservations are done at this point.
I used to know people.
So I can get her in if she wants a reservation at my place.
She
hadn't called. Yeah, she hadn't called yet. But if she wants, I got two tables saved. Just in case.
A gentleman over
Thank
here.
You. Thank you for recognizing that. What about you, Senator, playing entree, Michelle? That's what I want to talk to you about. What are you doing? Because spaghetti and meatballs for Christmas, tradition in your family. What about Thanksgiving?
Well, usually a turkey, usually a ham. In recent years, I think everybody's kind of gotten a little bored with having just a turkey. So might have to mix it up a little bit. Suggestions?
Yeah, pre-cooked bird for you at the store. You get all the fixes. You don't have to worry about
it. Didn't I just say that?
but all the fixing, not only the bird, you can get the bird either fried or you can get it baked or you can get it stuffed. You can get all the rice dressing, the cornbread dressing. You get all the beans, the peas. Yeah, you get everything already done. That was my point.
Yes, you can.
Well, let me know about the reservation.
I'll get back with you.
Let me know. Well, just a thought. While many of you have been sitting on your laurels waiting for the Thanksgiving turkey to land on your table, I've been giving some serious thought about what I'm going to serve to my guests, which is why I mentioned reservations at Revolution. I start to think also that this is our first Thanksgiving at the restaurant, so we have to do something really special, don't you think?
It's
got to be memorable. I'm wondering, should we go traditional? Should we go non-traditional? I mean, you know, Revolution is about kind of traditional but revolutionary.
Exactly.
We're going to have a little bit of everything imaginable. I'm sure you're going to find that turkey with us. You're going to find that sugar cured ham. Remember when I did my root beer glazed boiled ham? How everybody
those
went
are
crazy.
Delicious.
Swami Yoda, see this. I take this big ham and I stud it with cloves and oranges, and then I put it into a pot and I cover it with a good local root beer.
Cover it
all the way in a cast iron pot.
It's a lot of root beer, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. It's about a 6-pack or more. And then you bring it to a rolling boil, put a lid on the pot, reduce it to simmer, and let it cook all the way down for about 2 hours until the root beer turns into a syrup in the bottom of the pot. That becomes the glaze for the ham. But think of what's in root beer. You have a little clove, a little nutmeg, a little cinnamon, a little allspice, all the good things that would go on a ham.
And so you say the root beer reduces?
Well, sure. It reduces all the way down to its sugar component, so it's nice and syrupy at that point. So you have a root beer syrup, and then you mix that. It's not sweet enough, but a little brown sugar.
That might be easier than frying that bird.
And
I'm just saying.
And back on the hardware, too. I got a cast iron pot.
Plus, I think people would be really excited to say, Slava, where did you learn this technique from? You go, sir, it's just been in the family. Anyway, I think that Thanksgiving is not only one of those wonderful traditions. It's when families come together. It's when people drive in. It's when people come and bombard your home. And then you have to think of all those good things. Of course, Thanksgiving is a new world idea, right? I mean, it's been around for quite a while. Thanksgiving had its roots way across the ocean once again in ancient times. It was the Egyptians and the Greeks and the Romans who feasted and thanked their gods for the fall harvest. The Jewish people celebrated an ancient custom of Sukkot, a version of the harvest festival. But there's only one written eyewitness account of what we referred to as the first Thanksgiving.
That's true. It was an account that was written by Edward Winslow, you know, big name there in the original colony. It's a book called Mort's Relation, and in it he detailed the Mayflower Pilgrim settlement in Plymouth. And he talked about this celebratory feast, giving thanks for safe passage on the Mayflower, the end of a drought, and a successful corn harvest. It was such a celebration, it lasted for 3 days. I mean, that was some kind of feast, right? And must have been one heck of a corn crop for it to go on that long. But they certainly needed a lot of food because it wasn't just the colonists. There were about 50 of them.
Do we know that for sure? The records indicate exactly how many people were there at the celebration.
Well, they know how many people came over on the Mayflower, many of them didn't make the passage, many of them died. So I think that they do have a good account of how many people were there.
About 90 family members, except.
Well, that was the Native Americans. So we had about 50 because the colonists were out. Numbered. Good thing there were friendly relations. About 50 colonists plus the 90 kind of extended family members, so to speak, of Massasoit, the chief of the Wampanoag tribe. But he didn't just show up. They didn't just come and expect to be fed. They brought 5 deer that they had killed. And Winslow also mentioned that the colonists contributed what he called wild fowl that they had shot. So this is interesting. It was probably geese. It was probably ducks. But you kind of wonder, you think there was a turkey on that table? I don't know. Wasn't exactly mentioned, so.
I don't think there was turkeys. I think there had to be a lot of ducks. I heard there were lobster.
Well, he wrote that they had not only lobster, but they had fish and mussels and oysters.
Mussels and oysters. And, of course, they had corn and seasonal vegetables. That's where we first kind of hear about pumpkins and our squash and possibly the native cranberry may have even made its appearance at that time for the first time, Slama. You're hearing the actual time in history that the wild
cranberry made
so
it.
So you're saying cranberry, right, yes, but maybe not turkey and definitely lobster.
Yeah, definitely lobster mussels. But yeah, cranberry.
But no sauce.
No, it definitely wasn't a sauce. Sugar was not yet available at that time, and no pumpkin pie either at that time.
No pumpkin pie.
And instead of 3 days of watching football games after the feast, there were 3 days of games. Now, their games consisted a lot of what our games were like in St. James when I grew up at Uncle Paul's camp.
Y'all did 3 days of games.
3 days of games and holidays. And just like them, we had musket shooting at each other.
I think they were shooting at each other.
Anyway, the record books show that all of the cooking for those 90 plus 50, 140 folks, five deer that had to be skinned and lobs had to be fished, mussels had to be dug, pumpkins had to be harvested, cranberries had to be plucked from the soil, done by four women of the colony, who, of course, couldn't bear arms, so to speak. So they remained in the colony, and they fed over that 140 folks for 3 days. What an honor those ladies had. Imagine these women cooking, four of them. They had to go pick everything, dude. It's not like you go to the grocery store today.
Yeah, they're slaving in the kitchen while the men are sitting around in their powdered wigs and silk stockings.
That's my men. Well, fortunately for the ladies, the first harvest was not intended to be an annual event.
I wonder why.
Well, anyway, y'all, Thanksgiving began right there. George Washington's Congress requested a day of public Thanksgiving and prayer, and we're going to continue to talk about this great feast. We'll see y'all in just a minute.
Support comes from Bayou Teche Brewing, presenting KRVS's live broadcast of the CD release party for En Français Deux, Cajun and Creole Rock and Roll, coming up this Saturday night at 9 at the Blue Moon Saloon in downtown Lafayette, featuring performances by the Babineau Sisters, Al Bayrard and Les Filles, and the Soul Express Brass Band with special guest Corey Leday.
Daddy Cecil here. For 2 hours of word sound power, Rasta Reggae Radio, it's Jamon. Jamon, Sunday nights, 9 to 11 p.m. Rebroadcast Saturday mornings, 1 to 3 a.m. here on KRVS.
There's a car, truck, or boat taking up space at your house, and you're finally ready to do something about it, KRVS just might be the answer. Your vehicle could be used to support public radio in our community through KRVS's car donation program. One phone call is all it takes. Whether it's running or not, we'll come and get the vehicle, send you a tax receipt when it sells, and you just supported KRVS. Call us now at 877- KRVS 887 or visit our website at krvs.org to learn more. And thanks.
The family's at the table. this Thanksgiving Day. With loved ones all around us, we bow our heads and pray. Thank you for the turkey, the Cajun candy cans, corn rice dressing, and honey glazed ham. Table set to feed us, the silver sparkles bright. They're laughing gaily. Atmosphere's just right. Thank you for the turkey.
All right, everybody, welcome back to Stirring It Up, the best tasting show on radio. And today we're talking about one of my favorite subjects, Thanksgiving food and Thanksgiving holiday. And right when we were going to break a minute ago, I was mentioning that, you know, Thanksgiving was one of these harvest feasts that wasn't intended to be an annual event when it was first done. And it was George Washington's Congress who requested a day of public Thanksgiving and prayer. And it was in October 1863 that President Abraham Lincoln made a Thanksgiving holiday official signing, which made it a religious proclamation inviting his fellow citizens in every part of the United States, as the proclamation said, and also those who are at sea and those who are sojourning in foreign lands. Michelle, I think that's a pretty interesting way to say it, sojourning in foreign lands, to set apart and observe the last Thursday of November next as a day of thanksgiving and praise to our benevolent Father who dwelleth in heaven. I think that's pretty beautiful.
It is beautiful. I bet that proclamation could really stir up some Thanksgiving conversation today. You know, it was Franklin Roosevelt, though, who actually sealed the holiday by setting the day of Thanksgiving as the fourth Thursday of November.
And, you know, in every culture and generation has reason to give thanks for their blessings. And what better way to express that than around a table, as that song just said when we came back in, about sitting around the table with friends and family with turkey and candy yams. So, Michelle, today we have a great guest because for Thanksgiving, you need, we're talking about exotic foods. We're talking about things that really make a difference on the table, things that people are going to talk about. So with that, I think you've found a great guest today who can bring us into a really special place with Center of the Plate.
We have the mastermind of one of Louisiana's signature Center of the Plate holiday foods. And, of course, it's not just for holidays, but our brain kind of goes there at this time of year. Sammy Hebert is our guest, the creator of the now world-famous turducken. Now, Sammy and his 11 siblings, 11, he's got you beat there, John, grew up in Maurice, Louisiana, and they worked at the family restaurant, which his parents opened in 1974. 10 years later, Sammy and one of his brothers decided to take the restaurant's concept of stuffed chicken next door, and they opened up Hebert Specialty Meats. Now, nearly 30 years later, Sammy is still in there stuffing and selling turduckens and chickens and everything else by the thousands. I always think it's interesting. We actually take folks there a lot of times to show them a little taste of Louisiana and the specialty meat markets. And Sammy, a year or so ago, boned a duck, a chicken, and a turkey for us.
And we timed him, remember?
Timed him. Under 6 minutes. To do all of them. And he did it in slow motion that day the chef's benefit so they could keep up.
So they could photograph it. It was masterful to see him work.
Sammy's a hard worker, a businessman, an entrepreneur, a family man, and he's a darn good friend. We're delighted to have Sammy with us on the radio show today. Sammy, welcome to Stirring It Up.
Well, thanks for having me. It's very proud of getting to this point in my life and being a guest of y'all. It used to upset me when people would try to copy what I did or use my name and stuff to try to better themselves. But now I've kind of humbled myself and just thank God to be blessed with everything I have, you know, in business, and very good employees, and it takes all that just to make it nowadays, you know, just getting to that point.
Yep.
When you said about counting your blessings and being thankful, I was watching Food Network this morning, and what's that guy's name? Guy Fiora. He was talking about turduckens. So, of course, it caught my attention because I'm thinking, oh, he's going to Hebert Specialty Meats. I'm going to see Sammy right here.
Yeah.
He was in Florida. I was infuriated for you. So let me try to adapt some of your attitude and not be mad.
Well, yeah, there are so many people now that, you know, they're the home of the turducken. But in my eyes, I know everybody that starts to talk about it, everybody knows deep down where it's
Oh, yeah, they know where it comes from. Now, I want to say I appreciate it, Sammy, for you taking the time to be with us today, because this has to be the craziest time of year for you. How's business? I know you're busy all year long, but this is really crunch time for y'all, huh?
Yeah, actually, it's busy all year long, but this November and December is really kind of when make your hay when the sun shines.
My
hay time when I really, you know, make my profit for the year.
You know, we were mentioning that your Hebert Specialty Meats store actually grew out of the family restaurant business. Tell us a little bit about that journey and how that transition happened. I know it kind of had to do with stuffed chickens, but...
Right, we started out next door at Soup's. My dad's restaurant opened in 74, and an old family uncle was deboning stuff and chickens for his friends, and he wanted somebody to learn it before he died, and he taught us how to do it and started doing them on the plate lunches on Sunday. And then you got busy for the holidays, people wanted some to give out to their friends. And it, the last year before we opened the meat market, we did like 1,000 turkeys just to give out for oil field companies.
Wow.
You know, giving to their customers and stuff. And then, you know, in a family business, you know it's never going to be yours. Me and my brother decided, I got laid off. I was in the oil field and doing odds and ends jobs, construction here and there, and I decided that we would try doing the little meat market next door, you know, and I came up with the name Hebert Specialty Meats because I thought everything we do would be special, and it, you know, it ended up being just that, and started off with two stuffed chickens at the time and maybe, you know, a couple of different kinds of sausages, kebabs, and stuff like that. Maybe 20 different items. Now we probably have 120 different items. You know, we have 11 different stuffing for chickens, probably a dozen different sausages. I mean, you name it, we got it. Anything in the line of cooked gumbo, soups, pies, just about anything you would want.
Now, Sammy, go back to the time when y'all decided to kind of open the shop. What was the initial response of the customer coming in and having to address this? What is it? How do you cook it? I mean, when did you first start to say to yourself, we're on to something here?
You know, when we first started, people said we were crazy opening a place like this in a little town like Maurice, you know, have enough people to support it. But I don't know if it's the gnat for the taste, and I don't sell anything that I wouldn't eat or doesn't like. So, and people just kind of started coming in, and they liked it, and they, you know how it is in business. If you got good stuff, 10 people will tell one person. If you got bad stuff, one person will tell 10 people.
Right, exactly.
That's kind of how we always did stuff, just by the, you know, word of mouth, and just always had good stuff, and I'm not trying to be conceited. I just think that's how you do good business.
Absolutely. It is about word of mouth. It is about other people telling your story. And it seems that the turducken craze has never died down. It only grows. The word is spread. National Geographic did a piece on you guys in 2005. I know that had to just really bring the word of turducken in your little shop in Maurice, Louisiana, outside of Lafayette. But the passion really has spread on the product, I'm sure. Just word of mouth by everybody who's bought it and told friends about it probably has done more for it than the National Geographic ad, because it's good product being talked about by friends and family.
Yeah, right. And it really blew up in 96 when we made the front page of the Wall Street Journal, November 27th. Of 96.
You remember the date exactly, huh?
Yeah, that really blew up the turducken. Then our phone rang off the wall the next day just from people calling to find out about it, how they could get it, you know, this and that. That kind of also started another craze of people trying to duplicate it and try to take business away from us because we were successful. You know, we got involved with the USDA because that kind of turned the light on in them, saying, how do these people get all these people these turduckens? They're not USDA inspected. And, you know, that kind of started a whole bunch of stuff, stopped us from shipping when we were doing it. Just, you know, people calling us for our products, so we sent it to them. And at the time, it wasn't legal. Now it is. We can ship to an end user now, but back then, you know, they wouldn't let you do that. So.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Was it things like that Wall Street Journal article and just word of mouth that led so much to the popularity that it led to the franchising of the stores? That was something that I just learned in talking with you the other day. I didn't realize that you had several Hebert Specialty Meats.
Yeah, the franchises kind of started after that happened. and we couldn't ship anymore, so we kind of had to come up with something else to make up for that loss. So Chris Catlett, our first franchisee in Houston, came in and, you know, said, look, I've been wanting to open a restaurant or something. And he said, I found out about this stuff. He married a girl from Lafayette, and he said, every time I go back to Houston, I got to bring, you know, ice chests and chickens and stuff. He said, I'd like to talk to you about opening up A-Bears in Houston. And we kind of went back and forth and came up with a deal that we were happy with and he was happy with, and that's how it started.
Not just anybody can get a franchise. I mean, you do have some requirements.
Right. It takes a special person to want to do this and do it right and do it good. I get franchise calls every day. People want to open a franchise, but they want to buy my product and resell it. That's what they think a franchise is, and that's not what it is. You know, I teach them my cooking, my recipes, you know, all my knowledge, and they use my name, and I train them, and then they, in turn, pay me by franchise costs and royalties. So I can tell by talking to somebody for an hour if they're going to make it. They got to have a heart, and they got to want to work. I'm sure John knows what's involved with running a business like this.
And also, Sammy, I think just for our listeners, the turducken is a deboned, as you mentioned, there's varieties, but a deboned turkey that's then filled with a stuffing of sorts. It could be a cornbread or a rice stuffing or a multitude of things. And then into that goes a duck that's also deboned or chicken that's also deboned and stuffed with possibly a different stuffing, and then all put together in this deboned triple poultry item is then packed for roasting. And as you slice through it, you have all these different meats with all of the wonderful stuffings. That's really a unique product, and I've watched you do it, and I'm going to tell you, I've been cooking professionally for 30 years, and I can tell you I'm mesmerized when I watch you do the 6 minutes to debone all of those poultry items and put them together and sew them all together after they've been stuffed and seasoned. It's unbelievable, so I cannot even imagine someone walking in saying, I want a franchise, show me how to do this. I don't know if I'd have those guts. So you have some really interesting people, I guess, who's jumped into this, and they're being very successful at it, huh?
Yeah, the Houston's real good. They got so many people there. The only thing bad about it is now they have 3 locations because people in Houston aren't like people from Lafayette or that'll drive 45 minutes to get good stuff. They just don't like to drive in traffic. So that's kind of why he had to open different locations just to get more business than one location like I have here. But
right. How many turduckens do you think are sold in a year? Do you have your hand on the pulse of that number?
Through all the stores, we probably sell 10,000, 12,000. At this store alone, I probably do about 3,000 to 3,500 a year. And it just kind of never stops growing. The number always grows a few every year, just, you know, from the start of the when we made the first one. Didn't make many that year. And I don't even know if y'all know how it got invented. I didn't invent it. I invented the name. I mean, I came up with the name when this old guy came in and asked us. And he brought his own turkey, duck, and chicken out of his backyard that he cleaned and brought in a number 3 dove and asked us, can y'all debone these? I mean, we were doing the chickens and turkeys at the time. But said, can y'all debone these and, you know, put them inside each other and make some kind of concoction? And I said, sure, we'll try it. And, you know, came up with turducken. And now I'm pretty proud. It's in the dictionary. I came up with it. I didn't get no credit for it, but it's actually in the dictionary now.
That's when you know you've made it, Sammy.
Well, Sammy, there's not many people who've actually created words for the dictionary. Congratulations. No doubt about that. Have you attempted to expand it by doing other animals, like, say, like a suckling pig? Or
we do debone pigs, and, you know, people have ordered, can you put a turducken inside of a pig? And we've done it. We don't do many because it's such a big animal. I mean, you got to have a 30, 40-pound pig by the time you do all that. Cook it up, you got to have a big crowd of people to feed, you know?
Right. Well, Michelle, I think you had written in one of your early documents, I want to remind myself to talk about that, that wasn't the first time stuffing had been done in an animal. That goes all the way back to Greece and Rome as well, right?
Right. There's an interesting little story from a feast in Rome that did have a suckling pig that was stuffed with another animal and another animal and another animal all the way down to a small little bird that they called the fig pecker. You got to wonder how they cook it.
Was it all boneless?
I don't know. I don't know if it was all boneless.
Yeah, and I don't know if it was all boneless either. I think there's so many folks out in the country who claim not only knowledge of the origin of turducken, or that somebody they know created the name or whatever. And I just wanted to make sure that all of our listeners out there know that we do great research on this show, and we are food fanatics on this show to get the facts to the customer and to the listener. And we can assure you that you are listening to the voice of the guy who absolutely, without a doubt, put turducken not only in the dictionary but on the map. So when you hear, oh, I know somebody's father who created this and did this and whatever, hey, you're talking to Sammy right now. That's the guy who did it. What's up for the holiday is coming up? Any new and interesting things? I mean, all of the traditional Cajun items are hot, yeah, and heavy, actually, as always.
Not the same old things, but I try to come up with a couple of different items every year, kind of getting out of hand. You know, like I said, we probably got 120 different items now from the time we started to the new thing I just started making, pork and pepper jack sausage. Mm. You know, people always want something, try something new, and made some deer sausage with it and cooked some at a game last night, and everybody was going crazy. Like,
well, I'll tell you what, you're in your season of the year, no doubt about it, even though the turducken sells around the country all year long. Now, you do ship throughout the continental United States, right?
Right. Like I said earlier, it's legal for me to send to an end user now. Like,
right.
Before, I couldn't ship at all because USDA regulations. Now I can ship to an end user, which means somebody that's going to buy it and cook it at their home or whatever. We send out a lot of stuff. And actually getting ready, I'm opening another store, just a storefront retail location on Ambassador Caffrey.
Oh, that's 89. That's fantastic.
Right, so.
That's fantastic. Well, you know, it's always a pleasure to visit with you, and it's been great, obviously, to have you on Starting It Up today. I know how your time is really critical right now. I also appreciate you, as Michelle mentioned a minute ago, you are so generous with your time, because whenever I have visiting chefs and friends from around the country coming in and we want to do the Boudin Trail or something, we always have Hebert Specialty Meats on our agenda. And not only do you always open your door to us, you always give us cooking demonstrations, and then you have something for us to eat. And I just want you to know how much we appreciate all that you do and how you represent your specialties just so wonderfully, and what a quality product you have. And when I want turducken, there's only one place to get it, and that's Hebert Specialty Meats. And I also want to say that we're going to have all of Sam Hebert and the Specialty Meat information on our website at www.jfalls.com. And that way you can just go to my site and go to the radio show, and you're going to find all of the information on how to get in touch with Sammy, because you want to get on that list to get your center to play an item ready right now. So thanks again, Sammy, for being with us.
Well, I sure appreciate it, and I'm honored to be a guest of yours, because you're very well known yourself. I mean, I've always been proud to know you, and thank you for doing what you've done for me, and even I feel real proud that you want to come to my shop, because I know you're a very well-known and honored person.
We only select the best, and you're right up at the top of it. Y'all, we're going to be back in just a minute, so y'all go find Sammy on the website, jfalls.com, and put in that order for that turkey.
Come on and hear the yam man cry, and a yam today. The sweet potato that he'll fry will be yam today. The little step that you see him do, with every yam that he sells to you, it's something that you ought to try. Come and yam, yam, come on and yam today. Come get what I've got, it will hit the spot. Get your sweet and hot yam. Raise your hand and sway, like you hold a tray.
Nadia Raymond filling in for Georges Collinet this week. I'll be taking you to New York City on a radio tour of the 2012 Latin Alternative Music Conference. This week on Afropop Worldwide from PRI, Public Radio International.
Sunday night at 8 on KRVS.
Konnichiwa, this is Emily with Rock Japan, inviting you to join me late night Fridays at 3 a.m. and Mondays at 11 p.m. here on KRVS 88.7 FM. We'll explore the new, old, and experimental music of the island nation of Japan and how they rock the world from dusk till the rising sun.
Me of a song called Turkey in the Straw. I'm not sure that's it.
No. But
that was the bluegrass.
That's the bluegrass version, yeah. I guess. Huh? You know, I was up in Black Bear Farm for a couple of days this past week up in Knoxville, Tennessee. And everywhere you went onto the property as you walked into a building, that was the music that was playing. Fiddles and that kind of bluegrass stuff.
So you had a good time.
I had a great time. It was fantastic. Y'all, welcome back to Stirring It Up, the best tasting show on radio. And, of course, we're talking about Thanksgiving, and that means we're talking about turduckins. We're talking about turkey. We're talking about porchettas. We're talking about crown rolls. We're talking about big cast-on pots full of gumbo. We're talking about piece motifs, those big designs right in the center of the table to wow all of your holiday guests. And before I get into the recipe, Michelle, we want to mention our Facebook page.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, we've had a little conversation, I believe, on the Facebook page, Dean.
Yeah, Hubble's coming back in. He was letting us know that he has 11 pounds of andouille.
Oh, slum. Pronounced with an O in the front, not an A. Not andouille. If you say andouille, I'm saying that must be a Mississippi.
And some andouille.
Thank you, andouille. I don't mean to call you out on the air, but I mean, you know what I mean. I called you out on the air.
Well, and we like getting responses from lots of folks out there. So if you'd like to make a few comments on the show or make some suggestions, go to facebook.com/stirringitupradio and let us know what you're thinking. facebook.com/stirringitupradio.
So anyway, y'all, our stovehounds, let us know what you find in your community, or let us know if you've been to a place or traveling through something that we need to know about. Now, Michelle, we're always talking about building the library, right? We're always talking about books that we have in the library that we refer to whenever we have a topic on the show. We go to the library, we find a book that we want to entice our guests to go to the store, purchase, or go to one of the online services. A lot of times you can get these books for $2-3.
Mm-hmm.
But you definitely want them in your library because they're important enough for us to mention on the show as a resource.
That's right. And they're not all, like the book that I'm going to talk about today, they're not all books that just came out in the last year or 2 years or 5 years. In fact, the book today I pulled off the shelf was published in 1975. Since we're talking about center of the plate fowl, so to speak, I thought this would be interesting. It's called Cook the Wild Bird.
All right. I like that.
I love the title.
I could do a whole show on that title.
I know. It was written by Milo Youel, Youel, and I think perhaps the subtitle kind of describes the book maybe even better than I can.
The subtitle.
The subtitle. An erudite treatise on the joy of hunting, cooking, and eating game birds, containing a galaxy of modern recipes on game bird cookery in America, with significant information on the various game birds, plus hints on how they are hunted. Now, that's a subtitle.
I thought that was chapter one.
Sounds kind of like the table of contents, does it? But it is interesting because he does include a chapter on field dressing the birds, including, you know, the steps of cooling and bleeding, plucking, singeing the feathers, scrubbing the fowl.
That sounds like an employee meeting at the plant.
Huh? Well, kind of, yeah. There's suggestions for aging birds and trussing the birds and freezing and thawing and carving. There's a chapter dedicated to cooking methods for birds as well, including how you cook the young birds versus the older birds, lots of recipes for wild geese, cranes, and swans, he includes, ducks, marsh hens, shorebirds, upland game birds such as turkey, and a whole lot more. And like I said, it is an older book, 1975, but there's a fair amount of charm in the book. And I find that in a lot of these older selections. I like to go back to some of the older resources. Cook the Wild Bird by Milo A. Youel. a great addition to the culinary library, and I'll have all the information on the book on our website.
Now, Michelle, you mentioned as part of his recipes there were cranes and swans and marsh hens mm-hmm. and things like that. You may have forgotten this, but I'll never forget. Remember the night we had dinner at the Watershed Restaurant outside of London, mm-hmm. and the swans were swimming in the lake outside? You remember that?
I do remember that. Now we got a recipe for them.
Yeah. And I was asking the question of the maitre d'. I said, you know, I remember swans were being eaten at some point in time. He said, oh, whoa, 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 whoa. He says, every swan swimming in every river or lake in England belongs to the Queen.
I was shocked by that statement.
He wanted to make it clear that under no circumstance would anybody touch a swan, because every swan in England belongs to the Queen by royal decree back in the 1400s.
So the maitre d' was giving you fair warning.
Don't eat a swan. He says, don't think about it even. You know?
I'd love to go back, though, and see that original game law, because the game laws were so strict. Royalty could eat anything, but those commoners were kind of limited to what they could trap.
And could have their hands chopped off or their neck or hung or quartered or whatever. They even walked onto royal lands to hunt something,
that's
if
right.
they're starving to death, every deer belonged to the
Absolutely.
Crown.
Poking out the eyes of the person, even, and I think this is so cruel, but that's what it was, cutting the foot pads off of the hunting dog so that they couldn't hunt.
I mean,
that's just...
We digress. Anyway, it was very interesting. And the Queen actually gets in her boat with her entourage, and once a year, they go up and down the Thames to take an inventory of her swans. And it's a very interesting holiday when the Queen goes from village to village and they're counting the swans. Then they know how many swans.
Now, I wonder if that is just like
well, it's
ceremony,
pomp,
traditional
It's called pomp and circumstances.
Formality.
Anyway, you ready for a recipe?
Yeah, I am.
You know, I had trouble with my recipes today, y'all, because, I mean, it's Thanksgiving. I could have done the turducken for you, but then I say Simon's going to talk about that. Then I said I could do my beautiful, sought-after, and often written about, many times paid homage to, crown roast.
Mm-hmm.
Stuffed with my beautiful Ruth Fertel oyster dressing, made with French bread and hot sausage from the creator of Ruth's Chris Steakhouse. Remember that?
Oh, yeah.
Inside of the crown roast of pork, which is absolutely magnificent. I thought I could do my overnight pork roast, which would allow people to put a pork roast in the oven and just let it go overnight. And then when you woke up Thanksgiving morning, it was already cooked for you. You didn't even have to touch it after that.
Thanksgiving pork roast, huh?
Thanksgiving pork roast, overnight pork roast.
I'm always thinking turkey or ham.
Well, pork is a very important part of Thanksgiving because that's the boucherie season, the slaughtering of the pig season. That's when you do all your andouilles and all that comes out of that.
And we're back.
Anyway, Michelle, you know I love to do porchetta, right?
Oh, you are a porchetta fiend these days.
Porchetta, y'all, is that ancient dish of pork that was always served in the streets of Rome during the time of Caesar. What are you looking at me for?
You made that up.
I made it up, but you know it's true.
I don't know it's true. That's
why
I was
asking. They had pig in Rome. They had fire in Rome. Caesar ate whatever he wanted. And if they're filling up a pig with a little pecker bird, what's the name of
Fig
it?
Fig pecker.
Fig pecker bird. You know they're doing porchettas. You know, I'm making an assumption here, but I know I'm right.
An educated guess.
Thank you. That's what I wanted to say, an educated guess. Mm-hmm. So, assuming that Rome had the porchetta, we know today that one of the favorite street foods of the Italians in most of the cities of Italy, including beautiful Florence, the home of the Renaissance, they eat porchetta. Which is just a fabulous, fabulous dish that's made with the belly of the pork. You ready for me to give you that recipe, Miss York?
I am. Am I going to be able to do this?
Absolutely, because porchetta is the king of the pork roast. I've seen it made with everything from suckling pig to the whole hog to pork loins wrapped in the belly of the pig. The belly doesn't sound that good. I'm going to call it the bacon side of the
My
pig.
My mother bought pork belly the other day.
You see that?
And she was delighted because she found it in a, you know, she lives out in Acadiana.
Right, right. She brings me boudin, you know.
She brings you boudin, she does. Well, now she can bring you pork belly because she found it, they brought a deer to have it processed.
So they're poaching.
They're not poaching.
Oh.
They're not poaching. Please.
Anyway. Here come the pads of the dog's feet right now.
But she found it in that little processing place in the butcher shop that they had pork belly. So now she needs a recipe.
Wow. Well, here it is right here. So porchettas are basically a pork rolls or a pork butt, which is the front shoulder, or, of course, the whole pig. But if you're using, as I do, the pork butt, the deboned shoulder of the pig, I roll it in the belly of the pig, which is the part that wraps around the ribs all the way to the bottom. My butcher from Eunice Super Red, I always call Andy over there, and he cuts the side out of a large hog, which would normally go into the smokehouse to make bacon, and then you would slice the bacon out of that pork side. Well, here you keep the skin on. It's about an inch thick of meat and all that wonderful, though I like bacon, but it's fresh. And then you lay it out flat, and I always have him debone a nice pork shoulder, about 5 to 6 pounds, and this is how I put it together. You ready?
You ready? Listening.
Well, y'all, first of all, the seasonings are really important, because once I lay that whole pork belly down on the cutting board, which is, like I say, about 2 feet long and about 1.5 feet wide, so you got a nice big old piece of pork there. The skin is down. The meat is up. I take my knife and I cut kind of hatch marks across it, X across it, so I can get the seasonings down into the meat, down to the skin. And I'll put in there a mixture of a 1/4 cup of chopped fennel seed, 1/4 cup of chopped basil, 1/4 cup of minced sage, 3 tablespoons of finely chopped rosemary, and I'll kind of make a good blend of all of that with a little salt and pepper and granulated garlic. And then into the meat side of that pork belly, I'll rub about 1/2 of that fennel and basil and sage and rosemary and salt and pepper and all of that into that meat really, really nice. And then I'll drizzle a little olive oil on top, and I'll kind of rub that in to put a little more moisture down inside of it. And then I'll make sure that I have a good... I add a little extra salt, pepper, even a little red pepper flakes. I love red pepper flakes on a porchetta because it spices it up. And then I take a fennel bulb. You know, you go into the store and you see the fennel. It kind of looks like dill, but it's got a big, like a celery bulb on the bottom of it. But it's actually fennel. It smells anise flavor when you bite into it, or dill flavor. I take that small fennel bulb and I slice it very, very, very thin. I just kind of shave it, the whole bulbs. And when you slice it, you know it's fennel. It smells just like that beautiful anise flavor. And I spread that fennel bulb, thinly sliced. It's almost like finely diced celery, let's say, or sliced celery, all the way across the top of it, of the belly. And then I'll put about a 1.5 tablespoons of grated lemon zest on top of that. Again, you see how I'm piling up these seasonings?
Yeah, sounds good.
That's going to give the citrus note. Garlic, about 12 cloves of garlic, thinly sliced, I spread over the top of that belly. So I want you to think again what I have. I've cut the X marks into the meat. I've put fennel seed and basil and sage and rosemary, and then I've drizzled a little olive oil on it. I seasoned it with salt, pepper, and maybe a little couple flakes of red pepper. Then I came in with sliced fennel bulb, about 1.5 tablespoons of grated lemon zest, and then about 12 finely sliced cloves of garlic across that. Now, you think that's enough, right?
Sounds like it's pretty well seasoned.
Well, it would be once you add that cup of minced red onions on top of that, minced red onions. And then I put my pork butt that I've deboned, the pork shoulder of the pig, right in the middle of that belly. I set it right on top of it.
And now, is this like a roast?
It's a roast. It's a pork roast. A deboned pork roast.
So you're putting a roast inside
of the belly. That's right. And then I take some of that Cajun injector. You know what I mean? That buttery garlic blend of Cajun injector seasoning you can get. You don't need to have that, but I always inject the roast with that Cajun garlic butter injection. And I put that all in. Then I come back with the same thing I did a minute ago, the fennel seed, the basil, the sage, the rosemary, the black pepper, salt, and granulated garlic, red pepper. I've added a little fennel, a lemon, the clove. Everything I put on there, I rub onto the pork butt. And when I took the bone out of the pork butt, there's kind of a little cavity in there. I fill that up with all that fennel bulb and onion and garlic, too. So now you can get a sense of how much flavor is in this roll. Then you need a friend. You need a friend to help you wrap the belly.
Oh, they got to work for their food.
Yeah, that's right. You wrap the belly around the pork roast, and then you got to tie it tight. So now what you have is a jelly roll with the skin of the pork now on the outside. Because remember, it's a pork belly, and the skin was down. The meat was up. So you put the roast in. After everything's seasoned, you roll the meat around the roast. And now you have this kind of football-looking thing that's got the roast in there. Then you tie it tight about 2-inch intervals. And it's about 1.5 feet long. And now it's about, oh, let me say 6 to 8 inches in diameter. So it's a pretty big chunk of meat. And you tie it really, really, really tight with string.
You want it to stay together.
Oh, yeah, you got to keep it together, right. And then I do that and let it sit in the refrigerator overnight. It has to sit in the refrigerator overnight. Then when I'm ready to cook, y'all, I wrap it very tightly. First of all, in clear wrap, which a lot of people are confused about. But, yeah, just a good clear wrap. I wrap it tight because that keeps the juices in.
I bake it with the clear wrap on.
Then I cover it tightly with a good couple rolls of aluminum foil. And then I put it into that 375-degree oven. I put a thermometer in it. And it's going to take 8 hours to cook it at 375 until the internal temperature reaches 200.
I would think that that would be pretty critical because this is a thick.
That's a thick piece. That's why it takes 8 hours.
Piece of meat.
Yep, and it's wrapped in all that foil and everything. Then you take it out of the oven, you unwrap it, and you let the skin get brown and crispy inside the oven, and then you just shave it beautifully with some rice dressing for Thanksgiving. The recipe's on our website, y'all, jfalls.com. Do you want to wow your guests over there, Slama? You throw one of those porchettas next to that doggone cranberry sauce you're thinking about, and I'm going to tell you what, you're going to get wows like you never heard before. Y'all, we love you. You have a very happy Thanksgiving. Michelle, what do you want to tell our guests?
We're going to put a recipe, one of your favorite recipes on the website, smoked turkey necks and onion gravy.
Oh, I'm going to do that. And look, all kidding aside, I want everybody out there to know, Michelle, I do have a recipe for you. Can you? No problem at all, y'all. We'll see you next time. Y'all be careful out there and hug your relatives for me for Thanksgiving. Tell them I love them.
Of Viking treasure was unearthed recently in Yorkshire, I thought, let's build the Thistle and Shamrock with a hall of Nordic music, blended perfectly with the Celtic sound as the Vikings no doubt intended. If you don't join us, we'll come and get you.
Coming up Sunday evening at 6, here on KRVS. Support for KRVS is provided by the University of Louisiana at Lafayette Press, publisher of Zachary Richard's new book, Histoire des Acadiennes et Acadiens de la Louisiane, online at ulpress.org.
Music of the Kung Hu, the phoenix-headed hybrid harp of China. This week on Harpistry, Sunday at midnight and Monday at noon on KRVS.
Regional Public Radio for Acadiana, KRVS-FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles.